slump and you think this guy needs to go. Are you out of your mind? He is one of the all-time best that I've seen at it. Here we
go. The Rich Eisen Show. Weekdays noon to 2, only on WSBT. Our Notre Dame home game Saturday continues with WSBT Game Day. Live from Ivy Court Inn and Suites, here is your host, Evan Sharpley.
And we're back. It's the Game Day Show with Evan Sharpley. Last week, the Fighting Irish took care of business in South Bend with a blowout win over the USC Trojans. And now Notre Dame continues a, quote, single elimination tournament, end quote, here for the rest of the season with the NC State Wolfpack in town. Can you say trap game? I don't know. Kickoff is set for 3:30 p.m. for the next hour. I'm Evan Sharpley. I'm your host and tour guide as we prep for kickoff. And if this is your first time tuning in, this show is about setting the atmosphere, giving you a feel for the game day experience. We're going to talk with former Irish players. We'll discuss some X's and O's. Today we have two-time Notre Dame All-American and College Football Hall of Famer wide receiver Tom Gatewood and multimedia sports professor and journalist Len Clark. Riding shotgun with me today, we've got my producer Tim Growl, State Farm agent. And as part of your game day experience, be sure to stop by the Game Day Show at Ivy Court Inn and Suites. We're inside today.
That was kind of nice. You kind of segued from your game day experience right after my name. So it makes me feel pretty proud that I'm part of your game day
experience. If you want to stop by, you can meet the guests. You can meet Tim.
Oh,
Tim will
correct.
Be doing an autograph
that's right.
signing right. as well. Get autographs, get pictures, and enjoy some delicious Fisher's Tips and Chips barbecue. They're here already. It's ready to go. We'll talk with Rob later. He's going to bring me some pulled pork, bring me some rib tips. I'm going to eat it on air and give you some feedback right away. But, Tim, how are you doing? You have a good week?
I had a good week, and I have to chuckle because last week with the blowout, I didn't have to text you
no.
to have me walk me off the edge of the plank or whatever. But then in the
you didn't
third,
even get close
the
to the
third
point.
Or fourth quarter, I get a text from you because you missed my text. So thank you, buddy.
Well, I was going to just hang out with my 4-month-old Lucy and not
right.
even watch the game. We were going to bond a little bit, but
yeah.
she went to bed early, so I ended up watching the game. But we really didn't have much to talk about.
No. I told my wife, Evan's texting me. She goes, I thought you didn't text him. I said, I didn't. He texted
no.
me today. So anyway, a lot of people are referring this as a trap game, and we'll get more details from you later on. But
before we get going, I gotta give a shout out to the Penn girls soccer team, back to back state championships. It's pretty impressive.
Congratulations too. You know what? That's I got a daughter over at Penn, and I have a daughter that's grooming her way, a younger daughter, hopefully someday to play for them too. 2-0 they won.
Yeah.
They were number one in not only just in Indiana, they were number one in the country
the
season.
Into the season, yeah.
Right.
And the team they actually played. They leaped them during the year. So it was
right.
the number one and number two team in the entire nation, both from Indiana, playing each other for the state championship
game.
What
does that say for Indiana?
A great game. Two late goals, and the Kingsmen, they go back-to-back state champs. It's pretty impressive.
Well, you know what? We might need some back-to-back touchdown goals or whatever, in this game. So just a brief preview. What do you think?
This is I really like the Wolfpack. I got to be honest with you. They got a really good
football
team.
All right, let's get Evan out of here right now.
Come on now.
Somebody else in.
Well, I've got my red on right now, too, from the Sharply Training logo. You could kind of confuse it. You got the S and the T. It could look like an NC State.
Man.
Red's my favorite color. Come on.
Yeah, I was driving in today. I saw red again. I forgot that North Carolina State. I'm going red again. We've had Georgia, the maroon or whatever, Scarlet of Southern Cal, whatever.
Tim, I think this is going to be a great game. NC State's coming off a bye week, and it's kind of interesting how many times teams that play Notre Dame seem to schedule games where they don't play the week before. So you've got an extra week of preparation. You're coming into South Bend. It's a statement game. NC State's a top 25 opponent. They're looking for a top signature win that could kind of catapult them here into the second half of the season. They have a big one next week, too, though.
Sure.
They play Clemson.
Right.
All right? But you look at Notre Dame's schedule. It doesn't get any easier for Notre Dame either, and I've been saying it since last week. Coming off a bye for Notre Dame, I thought that bye was timed up really nice. You've got a rivalry game. It was an emotional win still. Even though it was a blowout, you kind of put everything into that. But the players have to know, listen, there's no wiggle room.
No,
you cannot lose. So that pressure, and I was talking with Brian Radigan actually mm-hmm. earlier this week, and that was when I brought up, hey, it is a single elimination tournament the rest of
every
the season.
Every week
is
right.
important. And as a former player, and I'm sure that the players on the team right now can resonate with that, sure, that's a little bit of pressure, but you're still in it.
Right.
Okay? You control your own destiny. If Notre Dame is able to win out, I mean, mm-hmm. it's going to be a great resume. Your one loss is against a Georgia team that right now looks as one of the top five teams we're top four teams if you're looking at the college football playoff rankings, which will come out this coming weekend. I mean, it's a great resume. You have NC State today. You still have Miami, who's undefeated. They continue to look better. All right, and then you've got Stanford on the road to finish the game. And Wake Forest and Navy are not cupcakes. Your resume is going to be really good if you're able to continue to win out. And that pressure, you feel it, but as a player, you love it.
I was listening to Brian Kelly on his show just before in driving in today, and he was talking about, and the question was asked by Jack Nolan about handling that, tough game today, and each game's a playoff. And he said, we've been working on this since January, that mindset of just trying to, the old adage, one game at a time, but trying to go out every opponent and destroy them, dominate them. And that's what they're going to try today, focus on. Something's got to break. We got the number six rushing team in the country against the number six rushing defense team in the country. And you can go on and on. There's so many comparisons all along charts. Turnovers, we're so plus and they are so minus. Or they just don't give up.
So it might be 0-0
at halftime. It could be. Plus, we're going to give them some great weather. Let's pay them back from that hurricane, today.
Man, this isn't too bad. This is nice.
Have some snow showers out there today.
Like I was saying, I was working outside earlier today.
Yeah,
it was great.
You had to drop that bomb on me today, too. So let's get started.
Well, all right. Well, we got Len Clark. Len, great having you on the show. You've got a lot going on, correct?
Well, did somebody say barbecue?
We do have barbecue.
as long as it's not Carolina barbecue, I have to tell you my barbecue diplomacy story.
You did not like the barbecue.
Well, it depends on what part of the country you're in. So if I'm in Carolina, there's only one type of barbecue. That is Carolina barbecue.
Correct.
Everything else is just pig with ketchup. And I use that whether I'm in Kansas City, in Texas, or Memphis. So I'm a Memphis guy myself, but if I'm in Carolina, I'll say there's only one type of barbecue. That's Carolina. Everything else, pig with ketchup.
You'll like this.
Well, you have to try this out. We've got the rib tips. We've got the pulled pork.
There's back by popular demand every
year.
That's
why I'm here.
Yeah.
That's why you're here. It's not to see us.
No, it is. Good to see you guys. Good morning. Hey, how many times could you say I was the opening act for Tom Gable?
That's right.
Don't mess it up, Len.
I'm not gonna mess it up. There's a lot of pressure on me, but thank you for having me. A lot going on, as you said, but a big game this afternoon. I hope it's a broadcaster's dream. Tony Roberts would say, I want every game going down to the final seconds. And I'm just like him. I don't care what the score is, let's go down to the final play. But the best team wins, and that's Notre Dame.
Well, Len, let's give us kind of a preview of things that you do have going on, the social side of it. You're very active on Facebook and kind of giving an inside perspective on what's going on in the stadium on a weekly basis. But talk to us a little bit about what you have going on a daily basis or weekly basis, and especially on game days.
Well, I tell you, I didn't think I would be back for football season because I was actually working in Ireland and my work visa was not approved. So I came back to Notre Dame in August and I said, well, I've got to do something. But the Notre Dame Football Heritage Project really was born out of the class I was teaching at Notre Dame, the multimedia journalism. And there was a portion of the class where we talked about entrepreneurialism. And I said, find something that you love to do that's your passion. Evan, with you, it's training the next generation of athletes. And so the idea that we came up with is to tell the fan experience story. It was, how can we get individuals to talk about their first time coming to Notre Dame, or maybe a game day ritual, or something that they do that really epitomizes the game day experience? And so for the past couple of years, we've been working on that idea, and it started off then, well, how do we get that? Using social media, we can have people tell their stories, but at the same time, let's create a database. So when we go over to the Heritage Hall of Fame at the Purcell Pavilion at the Joy Center, and you go and see your name in the monogram room, what can we do to bring the fans closer? So if they go up there, imagine a computer kiosk, much like the College Football Hall of Fame used to do with players.
Right.
People would walk in and say, Tim Growl, and it says Tim Growl's first game was in 1969 against Northwestern. That's what we want to do, is to build this database to really tell the heritage of the football fan. And then something when I was in Ireland is the idea of the certificate. Coming from an Irish ancestry, the Irish government was handing out ancestry certificates saying, let us know where your ancestors are from, and we put a nice little certificate together. So the idea of the certificate came out, once again, to recognize the individual's affinity to Notre Dame. And I've made a couple of certificates for you. Here's
they look
Rao.
Great. Mine's going to framed in next to all the pictures that I got from the show.
But the great thing on there, we want to work, we're entering this in the business plan competition to let more people know about it. But what we want to do is to work with alumni groups and media organizations. So if they go out and spread the gospel about this project, then 20% would go back to the local alumni club to establish scholarships in the club's name. So if you sell, they go for $20 plus $5 shipping and handling. So for $4 out of every certificate going back to the local club.
Great
so
idea.
You sell 100, that's $400 going to a scholarship for a local student from that particular area that is coming to Notre Dame. And so what we want to do is a rising tide floats all boats to really tell the Notre Dame experience, recognize individuals, and to put a little money back into the students' pockets.
We're listening to the Game Day Show on WSBT, and we're talking with Notre Dame multimedia journalism professor and media sports reporter Len Clark. You mentioned, Len, the Game Day rituals. What have been some of the coolest ones, or maybe some that have popped up on a Game Day experience? Where are people spending the most time, and maybe what's maybe one unique one that most people maybe wouldn't hear of?
Well, let's just take today. I've got a friend coming in from Ireland today, and she was really my test case. I said, I'm going to bring you to Notre Dame. You've heard all about it. We're going to go around and see the sights. You tell me what really resonates with you. And so we did, and she says, it's got to be the grotto. You know, going
That's
to the
my
grotto.
Choice, too. Sure.
You go down there, and it's a little paying homage to the individuals who were the founders of this university, but she goes, it's something special where you combine the historical aspect with the football aspect, and she goes, it's not what I imagined. It's magic. It's something. There's a feeling I can't explain it. What did Lou Holtz say? Those who are here can't explain mm-hmm. it. Those on the outside can't understand it. And so, but that's what we want to do is try to kind of put it into some sort of definition of what the Game Day experience is.
You know, Len, we always talk to the athletes about how they got recruited and how they came to Notre Dame. What's your story? I'm looking at all the different things you did from Alaska to all over the place. So what brought you to Notre Dame?
Well, it really goes back. I had a cousin that played Division I football, and it came down between Notre Dame and USC. So I met Ara Parseghian as an 8-year-old youngster, and that really left an impact on me. So he ended up going to the University of Missouri. The first college football game I went to, it was his game, Missouri playing Notre Dame,
oh, wow.
And Missouri wins in 1972
right.
In the rain. And so it was something about coming over for that first game. It's always been in my blood. I had the fortune to go to school here. And it's very unique. It's just something that is part – the blood is in the bricks.
So the journalism class, or what's the title of the class?
Multimedia journalism. As I said, I didn't expect to be back on campus. I was doing some consulting work in Ireland. But
sure.
Didn't get the work visa, so I'm back here right now. But the goal is to get back involved with the Gallivan Journalism Program. Some great facilities over there now with the new football stadium and all the multimedia in there. But it's just to work on this project and continue to find out where this whole social media aspect is going to go and continue to use Notre Dame as the platform to experiment with new technologies and
that's
the Notre Dame sports.
You embrace technology. I saw somewhere you're recognized as Indiana's first mobile journalist.
Well,
what does that mean?
Well, I come from a radio background, mm-hmm. but I knew I had to reinvent myself with all the new technology. So when the iPhone came out, I was the first individual to really start producing works on that. I went to work for a company that was a pioneer in the technology, and they said, you're the first person to do this. And so I'll tell you a story. I trained the individual WTOP in Washington, D.C., who was recognized as the first reporter. I said, wait a second. I trained you. I did it before you. How come my phone is not in the museum in Alexandria, Virginia?
That's right.
And so they came back and they said, Len, well, you're the first person in Indiana, so you are Indiana's first mobile journalism.
Hey, all right.
Well, Len, the Game Day experience is very special for people that are coming onto campus, and we talked a little about the grotto. Actually, I spent most of my time in the grotto, not on game days, but usually before exams when I needed extra help in the classroom. You mentioned the different classrooms and whatnot, and talk to us a little bit about how campus has taken shape or it's been reshaped and the academic side, especially with the Campus Crossroads Project, and what that's looked like, the classrooms that are there, and how it integrates with both athletics and sports.
Well, it's still a work in progress.
And academics.
There's a new director of the Gallivan Journalism Program, Rich Jones, who has been hired to replace Bob Schmuel. And I think with him, it's going to become even bigger and better. And with the new facilities on campus, the students and the academic programs will be able to use those facilities, which will give a global outlet, if you will, about the works that are being performed on campus so that it can be disseminated around the world. Before, there was no outlet. You had WFSND and WVFI and The Observer, but those were kind of just on the campus area. But now with social media, anybody with an internet connection around the world can actually access what's going on here. And so I look at that being more and more integrated into the program to tell the Notre Dame story on a regular basis. There's a lot of great things going on in this campus. Worldwide speakers every week on campus, but we don't know about them. But now with the facilities, you can tap in with multimedia into what's happening in the new Keough Global Affairs Center and see these worldwide individuals and sit back in the comfort of your own home. So it's great for alumni. It's great for individuals who want to come to this school to study. It's great for individuals who have an affinity for Notre Dame. But more importantly, it's just showing the good works that are being done by the university.
And as far as the Game Day experience then in the stadium now too, I mean, for fans, for students, that was one push, with the Jumbotron, increased Wi-Fi access, charging stations, all of those things to create, I think, a more user-friendly experience on a game day. What have been what's been the feedback on that so far throughout the season?
Well, but fortunately, I've been up in the press box where I'm not in the stands sitting on days like this. But, I've come from an old school. I'm interested to see the game day experience for the fans. But when I buy a ticket, I want to watch the game as opposed to looking at my phone. But as you look at the video board and seeing all the replays, it's just giving the enhancement to the game day product. So you're never going to miss any bit of the action. It's a whole different dynamic as opposed to going in, listening to the band, watching the game. It's that multimedia experience. You're seeing bits and pieces of the past brought into the future. And I'm still trying to understand it myself because I'm still an old school person going into the old stadium, buying a ticket and watching the game and then leaving. But now it's an experience where you can go back and 15 minutes after the game, go back and relive the game day experience. So I think the university is kind of looking at where can we find out what the maximum game day experience would be for these individuals too, that people will continue to buy tickets and to have that game day experience. And it's going to evolve because it's a whole different era that we live in.
Tim Grell and Evan Sharpley from the lobby of the Ivy Court Inn and Suites on WSB Game Day. And we're with the creator of the Notre Dame Football Heritage Project, Len Clark. Let me ask you, and I'm going to kind of put you on the spot. You're going to host an event next Friday, the 3rd, the Newt Rockne Memorial Society. Fill us in a little bit on that.
It's a brand new society. The Newt Rockne Memorial Society has been created to really to be established to remember Newt Rockne and to honor individuals who really exemplified the characteristics that Newt Rockne brought. And so this year it's done to honor Ira Parseghian and some of the players and individuals that coached for him or played underneath him in addition to some of the newer players. But I'm excited to be a part of it, to bring the individuals together in the spirit of Newt Rockne to talk about the Notre Dame experience and to honor one of the great coaches of all time in Ira Parseghian.
You got quite a few people, big names that are coming to
the
event.
A lot of big
too.
Names. And so, as I said, it's right before the Wake Forest game. It'll be short and sweet. We'll go over some hors d'oeuvres and talk Notre Dame football and then get geared up for a big Wake Forest game the next day.
Sounds great.
Len, before we let you go, big game this afternoon. Right,
and we'll talk about it on Monday morning quarterback review.
That's right, and I don't know if the same buzz is on campus this week as last week, and I don't know if you can recreate that. But what are your thoughts of the matchup today, the Wolfpack and the Irish? Kickoffs 3:41, a really efficient offense in NC State. Notre Dame's defense is obviously trending up. The Notre Dame rush offense versus a really good front seven in NC State. How do you see this game going?
Well, much the same way you do. It's going to be a battle of the trenches. You've got Bradley Chubb, a first-round projected draft choice defensive end for North Carolina State, going against the first-round draft choices potentially for Notre Dame. I think that's going to be the battle, but I'd look for Mike Elko to really unleash the defense and blitz early and often to try to get to the quarterback. They give up a lot of sacks. I think if you can get to them and have them adjust their game plan, Notre Dame will have the advantage. I think you'll have them on the ropes early, but it's just going to come down to the intangible. And they've been very efficient in the red zone. Justin Yoon has not been relied upon that much this year, 7 of 10 in field goals, and I look for it to go down, as Tony Roberts would say, that broadcaster's type game. And if it comes down to the leg, Notre Dame has a better kicker in the form of Justin Yoon.
Final score?
I said 31-24.
31-24.
All right, I heard a lot about that's a score that's kind of common and everything. We'll find out what Evan has to say later on. Thanks, Litt. Good to see you. Have a great day at the game.
Go Irish.
All right. On your home for Notre Dame football, 96.1 FM WSBT, this is Game Day with Evan Sharpley. We'll be right back with two-time All-America Tom Gatewood.
This is two-time Notre Dame All-American Alan Pinkett. Now back to Game Day AM on WSBT. Go Irish.
The Game Day show is also brought to you by Budweiser and United Beverage, Carmella's at McCree's, Creative Colors International, the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, and Hearth and Home. We're back live from the lobby of Ivy Court Inn and Suites, where we just talked to Len Clark about the Heritage Project, the Newt Rockne.
He's about as busy as you are.
Yeah. The Newt Rockne
Society.
Society.
Memorial Society. Event next Friday.
Also his work in Ireland. Yeah. Professor. Teaching a class on campus.
Yeah, this week when we were texting back and forth.
And Monday morning quarterback with me.
I was doing some research and pulling all this stuff up, and he was sending me some things, and I sent back to him and said, give me your titles. And since Matt goes, titles? I said, we have so many different things. So he sends me a few things back, and I go back, did you forget that you're a PhD?
He forgot that.
Yes,
huh?
He forgot.
He should have led with that.
I should have. I would have led with that. But oh, well.
Well, our next guest, we have the grandfather, right, of A.J. Dillon, the running back for Boston College, and Tom Gatewood is joining us today. Pretty proud grandfather today, huh?
Absolutely.
How did AJ play last night?
Oh, he picked up a quick 149 on the ground, a touchdown, and
wow.
Balanced attack, 35 points to 3 against Florida.
Pretty impressive. Boston College has kind of been trending up since the loss to Notre Dame.
Absolutely. They've really picked up in the ACC, which is important to them, to try to climb in the conference and get some respect.
Yeah, tough conference. Well, Tom, we appreciate you being on the show with us. We just had Len on, and we kind of start usually when we're talking to former players on your path to Notre Dame. You know, what led you here? What was that experience or that recruitment like? And ultimately, that led you to the decision to attend school at Notre Dame?
Well, it was I'm from Baltimore originally. And the Mid-Atlantic states in the time that I was coming up was not really, you know, looked at as a power base for recruitment. And, in fact, Notre Dame recruited me very, very late. It was February when I made a trip to the campus. In those days, you had until May to declare which school you were going mm-hmm. to. So there was plenty of time still left to make a decision. But I've been recruited since I was a sophomore in high school. So to be last almost on the list was pretty tough, and I was pretty close to thinking about where I was going to go. I took 22 trips.
Wow.
My senior year.
Jeez,
I was done with high school in December, so I had plenty of time between December and May to, you know, cruise, but I'd been looking for a while. And but Coach Parsegian was really the main ingredient to making me decide exactly where to go, because his sales pitch was very, very laid back. He was pretty much the only head coach not guaranteeing that I would be an All-American and that I was going to be All-World, so forth and so on. He very humbly said something like, if you just work hard, stay focused, and make Notre Dame your home, there'll be a pathway to your future. And basically, you can make a contribution because we looked at your film, and it indicates to us that you have potential. That was pretty low-key compared to...
What did it compare to the other schools? What were those conversations like?
I spoke to legends like Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler and Joe Paterno and Jim McKay and, you know, all across the, John McKay at Southern Cal. All these schools were saying a lot more superlatives than I was hearing from Coach Parsegian.
Rolling out the red carpet a little bit more.
Yeah. And in his humble office in the Rockne building at the end of campus on the bottom floor, the basement floor, with piles of paper on his desk. Now I look at, the Goog on campus and the Joyce Center and all the things, all the trappings of success that are here, and that humble beginning back in that little cave called the Rockne building, a far cry from what it is today, but that's what led me to Notre Dame, that promise of that contract of you work for us, you realize your potential in the classroom and on the football field, and your path will be a success story.
Did that same type of approach change? Was it the same once you got there too? What was Coach Parsegian like then once you came to Notre Dame?
Again, the term potential came out, but potential basically cloaked under the concept that potential has an expiration date. You know, you've got a lot of skill sets. Now you've got to relearn the craft all over again. Weirdly for me, though, I wound up getting number 44, and people for years have said, why did you wear number 44 as a receiver? It's because they decided I was going to be a running back. Their analysis of the footage was that this guy is a great broken field runner, can make people miss. That's a missing ingredient we're missing in our running attack, so we're going to concentrate freshman year on making him a running back. And in those days, of course, not till 1972 did freshmen are allowed to be on the varsity. So, you know, it's we didn't play mm-hmm. varsity football. So freshman year was a new learning curve, not being a star, not going from stardom and the parade All-American and the high school All-American in high school. Had to leave all that behind. That was a tough blow. Leave all that behind? So learning a new craft was tough. But again, my salesmanship started coming out, and I started pestering the coaches about, I think you ought to be taking a look at me as a receiver, receiver, receiver. I'm not really feeling natural about those cutback moves and all that traffic in front of me. Being a receiver on the line and only have to contend with secondary and a few times linebackers. But now I got defensive ends, defensive tackles, nose guards. I got to do a lot of things. And just wasn't comfortable, was not comfortable. And then, lo and behold, after a lot of pestering and begging to run some routes with Theismann, one day I went out and auditioned, and it earned me a spot on the number 8 wide receiver.
Number 8.
So it's like, okay, now it's time.
I'm on the list, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Now it's a start.
But I kept saying to the coach, but coach, I have potential. You know, I have potential. Give me an opportunity. So I gradually just kept working my way up the line. And after my first spring, showed enough potential to eventually become a starter. And I started 30 straight games and 2 bowl games, 32 straight starts.
Tim Ground, Evan Sharpley on WSBT's Game Day with College Football Hall of Famer, wide receiver Tom Gatewood. Tom, in talking that, we've been talking every show, we've had a dedication to Era because Era was nice enough to come on our show quite a few times. So we've been having somebody tell some stories about playing for him. One of the things we always ask everybody, Era was on the big tower, and everybody's one of the players on our first show described it as the voice of God coming down. So did the voice from the tower come down and call you out at any time during any practice?
I was lucky. I was able to avoid the preaching from the tower, the pulpit, whatever you want.
Pulpit, that's a good name. That's a good name.
Like right. Pulpit, yeah.
That sounds better than...
My story about Coach Barsegian is all of his... the fun he would have. He would have a smile on his face because he'd come out early with us when we were out just warming up for practice. And he would do drop kicks, drop kicking field goals through the uprights, but just doing it the old-fashioned
wow.
way, dropping the ball, touching the point, touching the ground.
That's a lost skill.
Yes. And he was always lining up at least at 30 yards from wow. the goalposts. And those balls were going in quite a bit. And as mm-hmm. anybody knows, Coach Barsegian, very, very competitive, whether it's handball, golf, yes. anything, yes. multi-talented guy. He was always trying to show off, you know, that skill. And nobody knew how to do that. So nobody would
challenge
you.
What's a drop kick?
Exactly. So, you know, that was his way, I think, of just getting us, you know, sort of relax a little bit. And then it was the whistle would blow, the horn would go, and now it's all business. So my one story about Coach, and because it was a learning process for me going from first game Northwestern as a sophomore, catching one pass the entire day. I was targeted once, caught one ball, 4 yards or 5 yard out route. That was it. We win the game. Get that under your belt. And you could get a sense that, and not knowing it, but I was really being groomed, getting ready, preparation. We don't want you to be in a situation where you drop a ball in a crucial situation and just totally destroy your confidence. Catch one ball, Theismann to Gatewood. We're underway. At that point, there is no Theismann to Gatewood combo. It's just me, 44, catching from number 7. That season would grow. And by the fourth or fifth game, we're in Yankee Stadium playing in a big, big arena. And the coach says to me, now don't be nervous. You know, this is sort of like coming out. It's like a Broadway show. Notre Dame is about entertainment. This is a big house. This is a big place. You're going to have some fun. I said, Coach, I'm relaxed. My parents are watching me. This is the first game they ever watched me play in. I've wow. got some folks out there that I'll be playing for, so I'm you know, I'm cool. And plus, I love this stadium because I was a Baltimore Oriole fan back in the day, and the Yankees were the big nemesis. And I spent more time out with the tombstones, out at center field, looking at all the greats and all the monuments out there in Monument Row. So that helped me really focus. And 9 or 10 catches later, and light up the score for a couple of scores. We're on the board now. Now it's the Theismann to Gatewood combination that we've launched. So just having those conversations about just relaxing and talking and him being human, that's my thought. But then junior season, playing against Purdue in the biggest game of my career, having a couple of near records and some records being broken. After the second touchdown, I come to the sidelines, and I think – the coach is going to coach me up and talk about something I did wrong. And he just whispers, you know, sort of in my ear with his hand around my shoulder, congratulating me on the touchdown, and said, today and forever, you belong to the Irish. Wow. And that's when I knew I was really wow. there, yeah. that he had my respect of me and I had my respect of him. I'm thinking he's going to talk football, and he's talking about encouragement that forevermore, I'm going to wow. be a part of the annals of Notre Dame.
Going from eighth to that.
Yeah. Eighth on the depth chart to that. That's pretty special. Yeah, you're listening to the WSBT's Game Day Show. We're live from Ivy Court Inn and Suites with Notre Dame's two-time All-American wide receiver, Tom Gatewood. Tom, one common thread that we hear from players that played for Coach Parsegian was his level of excellence that he coached and preached. And that was something that every person said that they carried or took with them once they left Notre Dame. Just talk a little bit about his character and certain traits that you were able to pull from him, either as a leader, as a coach, and then you applied to your life once you were done playing at Notre Dame, and then, you know, even into your career post-football.
It's got to start with the work ethic. I mean, it was sun up to sun down with him. Taught us all about preparation, preparation, preparation. That was the hallmark. So what does that mean? Is that that's just on the football field? No, it was spiritual. It was about the academics. I mean, we had what I would call a debriefing meeting every semester. Every football player would line up outside the office, and you'd go in and talk to the coach. And that was about looking at your transcript and looking at seeing what kind of grade point average you've got, what's going on, where are you heading, what do you think you're going to do, what are you going to do with, you know, it was philosophical. We were talking about not just X's and O's. Yes, there were film sessions, and you sit down and you talk. But one time, him taking me in his confidence and sitting down and say, we're going to do something different this year, okay? It's weird. I'm having a one-on-one with Coach Parsegian, and I'm not really sure. Whenever he called me into the office, I was never sure what was going to happen. And this deal was, we're going to put you in a situation where we feel we can totally utilize your skill. I said, okay, I thought I was doing pretty well. And, you know, I said, but junior year is going to be a different deal. So we're going to reinvent you, and we're going to line you up occasionally at slot. Sometimes you're going to be the X receiver, sometimes you're going to be the Y receiver. There's times we're going to stick you at the tight end slot. You'll be in the I formation going in motion. Roger Valdeseri, the sports information director, was also sort of in this, and eventually the nickname the Swinging Gate evolved. And that had to do with me swinging into various positions on the field so that it would be more difficult for teams to double me. Maybe St. Brown can learn from this because he's in a situation where he's getting doubled a lot, and all of a sudden his output, his production is low as far as stats, but he's still a threat. But he's not getting targeted as much. He's not getting balls. I caught 77 passes in my junior year, unheard of totals in college football at the time, and it was as a result of this unbelievable strategic.
How fun was that?
Use. It was really cool. But so another moniker for coaches, strategists, and he was way ahead of his time. This was his vision. Today, the slot position gets tons of passes,
Yeah, sure does.
Well, I was playing slot in 1970, I was in that slot position, but I was also at the tight end spot, pulling in a safety who's the fastest man in the secondary inside in traffic in areas he was very uncomfortable with. He taught me the understanding of make your opponent uncomfortable. So if I'm a businessman and I'm negotiating a deal, the deal is it follows. Make them uncomfortable. Be smarter than the guy across the table. And under those situations, that's something that has carried me into a career in sales, a career in marketing, a career in communication and television and radio. All of those things happened to me professionally after I left here. And some of those tools that I used then, I used and learned from Coach Parsegian.
Almost like a chess master.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
WSBT's Game Day Show with College Football Hall of Famer, wide receiver Tom Gatewood. Let's bring it back to present day, and you just kind of did with EQ talking about him. So what do you see in the receiving and passing game for Notre Dame and the receivers that are out there?
I see I keep looking at it and wanting to stretch vertically a lot more. There's a lot of passes that are thrown in the offense right now, 40 yards across field. The depth from the line of scrimmage is only about 3 or 4 yards, but the ball is traveling 40 to 45 yards across
field. I think close to 60% of the completions have been 5 to maybe even not even 10 yards. Well, we're looking at 5-yard completions, about 60% of the passes have been there.
Right.
Not as many vertical stretches
exactly,
right now.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think some of that may have been the maturation of the offensive line. you need more time. If you're going to throw a ball 40 yards downfield, the quarterback needs 3 seconds. If you're being rushed, you're not going to get that opportunity. So perhaps some of it had to do with the timing, bringing the team along, getting more confidence in that front line. That offensive line has really come of age over the last couple of weeks, and each week they're getting better and better. So I think you're going to see more vertical use of receivers, particularly using the tight ends more. And again, I'm so familiar with every position, every receiving position on the field, because that was that swinging gate formation.
Did you have a specific spot you really liked or resonated with the most?
I think I liked it from the slot only because I could run screens from there. I could run crossing routes. I could get to the center of the field a lot quicker from the slot than all the way out wide, being on the hash or being, you know, on the wide side, being so far out. Trying to run in balls from out there is pretty tough. But from the slot, I've got room to run in balls and out balls and screens.
And so, if you catch a team in the wrong personnel, you could be lined up with a linebacker. I'm sure
exactly
that was pretty nice.
Exactly right. So many times, so I could be on a team that had a really speedy defender, but that guy wasn't going to be the guy covering me in certain positions on the field. Or I could be in another situation. So I could garner any personnel I wanted and really exploit. So we had a great opportunity. For me, I was always catching probably somewhere between 50 and 65% of all balls thrown were going to me. And most of the time it was third downs. And everybody in the stadium knew, and I knew that I was going to get the ball, yet they were completed. So, you know, it was also a tribute to Theismann. He had a lot of speed. He could run, and so he was a threat. So if he's out on a rollout, which, again, the slot gets a lot of opportunity to do lots of things. So it was a really a heady game, a smart game. And I felt very, very comfortable because I got to. It was a mental game. So it didn't really matter where I was. I had an opportunity to get the ball.
Last week against USC, Notre Dame started off really hot. Two early touchdown passes from Brandon Winbush. St. Brown caught one. And then Kevin Stefferson, we've been told his rep count is going to go up. He's going to play a lot more. He's potentially a guy that could be in the mix as far as the vertical threat goes.
Yeah, stay in the field.
But, you know, but certainly if you have that vertical threat, it opens up so much more. You mentioned the tight ends too, Durham Smythe, Alize Mack. Those guys, their targets could go up. But if you're rushing for 300 yards.
Oh, yeah. But again,
yeah, that's nice,
but that's
right?
A great compliment to the passing game, too. The fact that, you know, that Adams is a threat to break a tackle and go 90 yards, or he can pound it for 5 or 6 over and over and over. You have that kind of dimension, and then you've got a quarterback who can run, too. So those threats really open up that passing game, and that's going to be coming. And Winbush is much more comfortable now. I'm noticing how he's – how he's throwing, how he's running. He's not apt to just leave the pocket as quickly. He seems to be more adjusted. But that offensive line is holding off the rush a lot better too. So it's all just developing and coming along as the season keeps progressing. The team just keeps getting better and better on all points.
They're going to need all phases
today. I kind of look back to the Georgia game. I mean, Winbush got rattled a little bit in that game, and as a quarterback, your time clock probably, it started to shrink a little bit probably over the next few games. But as you stated, offensive line has really gelled, gotten better each week. Today's a big game. We've been calling it every single one. We got a single elimination tournament the rest of the season. How do you see this game shake out today?
I think if they can stop Samuels. I think Samuels is the key. More than Chubb, I think you can always double-team a guy. You can always take care of the defender who's on the line with a lot of different schemes.
And they use Samuels very similar to how you're used,
exactly,
too,
all over the
exactly.
field.
Exactly. So I can totally relate to having that kind of a weapon. And he can be inserted at any time in different situations, or he can be out there on a permanent basis. He has, you know, a body that has – I mean, I was 6'2", 210, 215 – and so he's probably bigger than me, but I think he has multiple uses. He has a skill set. If they can neutralize him, I think that's the game more than Chubb. I mean, you know, Chubb is a great player, but everybody knows that. They've had a chance to look at film to see how have the other teams, you know, defended him, and they've had an opportunity. But Samuels, I think they really got to focus on him. I like Notre Dame. The use of all of their personnel, they have been able to have a different star every game. Every game, somebody comes out and makes a big contribution. And, you know, so it doesn't matter whether it's the Rover. Coney comes up with a big game last week.
Right.
You know, it's like they seem to have depth. You know, where did the depth come from? Nobody thought they had that depth at the game one, game two, but they do have the depth. So everybody can be a star on that team.
Well, Tom, we appreciate you taking some time. It was great talking with you. Enjoy the game today, and we'll continue to keep an eye on your grandson, AJ, there over at Boston College.
Hey, hey, go Irish.
Live on the porch of the Ivy. Excuse me, not the porch. We're inside. Oh, my goodness. The heat's got to me. We're at the Ivy Court Inn Suites. To get your reservation for your out-of-town guests or to book your own getaway, call the Ivy Court at 574-277-6500. We'll be right back with more football talk on Michigan.
This is former tight end Robin Weber. My job was to catch footballs. Yours is to catch every Notre Dame game right here on your home for Fighting Irish football, WSBT.
The Game Day Show is also brought to you by Kurt Outdoor Living, LKQ Pick Your Part, and Zolman's Tire and Auto. Well, Tim, we're back here at Ivy Courted and Suites. If you're in the area, make sure you come inside. Say hello to us. We've got some Fisher's Tips and Chips barbecue. We just got done talking with Tom Gatewood.
Wasn't that great stories.
Yeah.
You know, and we didn't – I forgot because I remember listening to him on Mutual Broadcasting, and then also he was wearing a gold coat there for a while back in those days when ABC, long before you. he actually did some analysts on for football on TV. Very, very varied career. But I love it. You just light up when you're talking with the receiver and somebody can really talk. You guys were really analyzing that, and I love the way – he was talking about how he fit in all the different positions and how that relates to today.
Well, what was pretty interesting for me and Tom hit on this was that was very revolutionary at the time.
Right.
I mean, no one was really doing that. It was more static formations. There wasn't a lot of movement or motion. And to have a coach really – I mean, to have a coach have the wherewithal to bring you in and say, well, we're going to try something totally different. You've had some success last year. How can we utilize you even more? And he said, everyone knew I was going
to
get the ball on third down,
but
they couldn't stop it because of how many different ways they were using him. And this was something that we talked about earlier in the season too. Is you know how can you get St. Brown more involved?
Right.
Get him in the slot, have him backside receiver, line him up to the field, play tight and go empty. Whatever
it is,
there's
got to be a way to get him free.
So there's ways that you can do that. And what was really neat to hear him talk about it was, I mean, that was way ahead of way ahead of the time as far as being able to do that. And you know what a career. And he was number 8 on the depth chart.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a steady climb then. And you know, he said hard work, it was dedication, but really neat to hear the different stories that he said that kind of resonated with him about Coach Barsegian.
What was really cool, we had Roger Valisseri on
a
couple of games show, and he's the one that took Thiesman, Joe Thiesman's
right.
name, and turned it Thiesman, that he was involved in marketing the swinging gate. Swinging gate, you
the
know,
swinging
out there.
Gate. that's pretty great. Yeah. So, big game this afternoon. Kickoff's 3:41. NC State's in town. The Wolfpack. We got more red, as you stated. All these red teams are in town. My favorite color. But we'll.
I'm checking the temperature right now. It's 37
right now
with a wind chill of 29, and it's not going to get much more above that.
Well, you know, fairly evenly matched game today. Notre Dame's averaging over 40 points a game. North Carolina State 35. Notre Dame's their passing yards are, and this is something we've talked about weekly, only averaging 160 yards passing, but that 317 on the ground is pretty amazing right now. On the opposite side, NC State, they're throwing the ball a bit more, 290 yards per game, very efficient quarterback, and Finley doesn't turn the ball over very much. And then both teams are running about the same number of plays, right around 75 plays. But the defensive fronts for both teams are very athletic, playing very well, playing with a lot of energy. As we stated earlier, too, NC State has two back-to-back games here, really big games during the second half of this season against Notre Dame today, against Clemson next week. And we spoke about the tough schedule that Notre Dame has to finish the season with NC State, Miami, Stanford, and then Navy and Wake Forest sandwiched in there between the two. So a lot of great football ahead this afternoon and then throughout the season. We've got Jessica, who's the general manager here at Ivy Court and Suites, and a lot still going on. Tell us what we have going on today, and then any availability throughout the rest of the season. We've got Wake Forest still. We've got Navy as well.
Yep.
Talk to us a little bit about what people can where people can find information and what you have going on.
Well, we do still have some rooms available tonight for the people that might be real cold at the stadium and want to get a nice warm bed after the game this evening. We are sold out for the next two games. However, I still invite everybody to come down, take advantage of viewing your guys' awesome radio show, eating some good barbecue.
That's right.
holiday season's coming up, might be a good opportunity to find the next place to have your Christmas party or, you know, watch a game from our lobby in front of our fireplace. It's a good time out here.
And once the season ends, how does it change for you guys? And do you have a lot of? There's always stuff going on campus.
There's always something going on.
You've got Notre Dame hockey, Notre Dame basketball going on. Is it pretty packed then too? What's the availability like once football season ends?
Once football season ends, it's a completely different game out mm-hmm. here. But we do have a lot of availability. We welcome anybody to come in and. Like you said, hockey, Notre Dame hockey is huge. We do get a lot of hockey fans, a lot of women and men's basketball fans here. And our rates are really, really affordable, and you can walk. Even in our South Bend winters,
there we go.
it's not that bad of a walk. You can see Compton and the stadium right from the lobby.
And where can people find information?
ivycourt.com, or give me a call at 574-277-6500.
It's just a great location. You're close to everything. A lady, I was here last week, and she was walking around going, oh, well, I need to go get some liquor and beer before. And Jessica said, cross the street.
There it is.
Somebody else wants a bar. Somebody wants a restaurant. You got everything. You're right here.
You got the everything. And Eddy Street Commons, just a real quick walk, too. So it's definitely a really cool vibe during football games and outside of that as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Thanks guys. Jessica. Thanks for coming
back.
We'll
see you next week.
Absolutely.
So as we talk about this playoff game every week, what kind of pressure? I mean, we talked about it earlier, but I don't know if we can put enough emphasis on it or not. I mean, it is trite. You got to play every game. So I guess that's just what we got to do today, right? Got to take care of business?
Yeah. There's pressure. Of course there's pressure. You already lost a football game. Mm-hmm. You got to win. You got a really good football team here in NC State.
Which if they lose, it's not the end of their season because they can play Clemson next week and win that, and they can still go to a
– Right, but they lost their season opener.
Sure.
And they're in
a conference.
And that certainly helps. And in looking at NC State, they don't turn the ball over much, and in their one loss this year, they turn the ball over twice. You have a quarterback that's very protective of the football, doesn't throw interceptions. Their three turnovers this year have been all fumbles. And that's really going to be, for me, that's really going to be the area that I'm going to keep a close eye on is who wins the turnover battle. So usually do three keys, and I'm going to kind of toss in one extra one if that's okay with you.
Keys to ensure an Irish victory. Go for it.
The first one is going to be, we talked with Tom about Samuels, Jalen Samuels, explosive player. They use him in special teams a lot. They use him all over the offense. He's a guy you have to be aware of. I don't know what Mike Elko is going to do as far as their plan to try to slow him down, but he's got to be slowed down. Special teams, Brian Polian, hopefully he has a plan of how are we going to contain this guy. I don't know what that's going to be, but there's got to be a plan.
Because our return coverage has not been great.
So number one is going to be, you know, containing Samuels, making sure that he doesn't win the game. He can make some plays, but he can't be the reason why NC State wins. On offense, you have to rattle Finley. It always starts at the line of scrimmage. Get him out of his comfort zone, out of his rhythm. Okay.
Right.
Turnovers. If Notre Dame defense, they have every week. If they can get a turnover, and this offensive score
just one, off,
just one.
One.
You, right. If Notre Dame gets one, Notre Dame will win, at least in my mind. All right. And then lastly is control the line of scrimmage. If I look at the defensive side, Notre Dame's defensive line has done a great job of creating angles for guys like Tavon Coney, Niles Morgan, Drew Tranquil is another guy I think that's going to come into play today as well. You know, trying to move these guys around to defend Samuels. If they can control the line of scrimmage, if they can create a turnover, I like Notre Dame's chances. But as it stands right now, I've got NC State winning by three.
We won't listen to any of the
27-24.
There's no boo, so anyway. Hey, you're being it real, man. We'll see where we go. We'll both be texting this game, I think.
Probably.
Evan, I want to thank all of our guests today, and a big thank to Matt in the studio and Jeremy here on site. Please plan to join Evan and I next week at 11 a.m. as we'll be back outside, we promise, here at the Ivy Court Inn and Suites, getting you ready for another big game and good opponent in Wake Forest. Plan to come out, get some autographs and pictures, enjoy some Fisher's Barbecue. Don't go anywhere. Our Fighting Irish football coverage continues right after the news. It's Game Day Sports Beat analyzing the Irish Wolfpack game. Immediately following them, it will be the official Notre Dame pregame show. Then it's kickoff just after 3:40 p.m. with Don Crickey and Alan Pinkett. Then, of course, after the game, it's the official postgame show with Darren Pritchett and Reggie Brooks. All this on your home for Fighting Irish football, 96.1 FM WSBT. For Evan Sharpley, this is Tim Growl.
Go Irish!
The home of Notre Dame football, the NFL, weekday sports beat, and JT in the morning, 960 AM, 96.1 FM.